Hello there, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Tech Bytes. My name is Dan Hafner. I'm your host, and I have a really cool guest for you today. We're going to talk about a really interesting topic inside of the world of accessibility, inclusivity, inside of the digital world. I'm really interested and excited for this conversation, and as my esteemed guest will talk about, we've already had some. I've already kind of got exposed to kind of the different intricacies and challenges associated with this whole world and everything like that, but we'll get into that in a second. But before we dive into that, if you are subscribed, if you're not already subscribed to the show, please subscribe. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you're listening to the show, please subscribe and leave a 5-star rating. That really helps the show get in front of more people. It helps us grow. It helps us bring in and reach a wider audience. So I really appreciate that. And if you're watching the show on YouTube, please be sure to click that little bell and get notified when we go live for the show. Okay, so I am joined today by Max Ivey. Okay, now who is Max Ivey? He is a serial online entrepreneur with over 15 years experience, and he advocates for accessibility and inclusion by showing business owners what's in it for them, what's in it for them inside of making things more accessible, making things more inclusive. And we're going to dive into this inside of the tech and the software world and things like this. So Max, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks, Dan. I appreciate you having me on the show, and just your openness to the idea of discussing the topic and letting me get in front of your audience.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. I'm really excited for this. So let's dive right into this. I mentioned to this before we even hit the record button here. This is something that I think it's kind of always been in the back of my mind. And I think it's also something a lot of people take for granted too, but it's something that's been in the back of my mind as to, for someone who can't see or someone who can't hear, someone who can't, who's missing, some of the senses that many people kind of like have and take for granted. When it comes to this world of using computers, using phones, using software, doing these types of things, what type of effect does that have, and what types of tools are out there to make things easier for people like that?
Right. So there are a lot of tools, and there are newer tools every day, especially in the area of travel and navigation. But, for people with vision loss or vision issues, it starts with screen readers like VoiceOver for Mac or JAWS for Windows or NVDA for Microsoft users or iOS on your mobile devices. It starts with screen magnification options. You have more and more automated closed captioning for people who are hearing impaired that are trying to absorb your content. You also have technology that allows people with limited motor control or people who are paraplegics or quadriplegics to control their technology using eye movements or minimal hand movements. So there's a lot of new technology. And then, of course, in the area of navigation, you have things like OrCam, and there's lots of new technology that is in portable, wearable, text-to-speech type applications. So, when it comes to digital, there are a lot of options, and really that's part of the problem for people on the tech side, because they not only have to deal with a multitude of disabilities, and then beyond disability, a multitude of challenges that maybe aren't always considered disabilities. And then they have to address the technology the way each one of those groups would solve their particular problems. And, just for somebody with vision loss, like myself, uses a screen reader, you have two different main platforms on desktop, which is Microsoft and Mac. You have two different main platforms in mobile, Android and iOS, but you have three screen readers. You have a fourth if you're looking at Android and text-to-speech. You have people who have a wide variety of vision acuity levels. So somebody may have some functional vision and depend on it more than technology. Somebody may have almost no functional vision and depend a lot more on the technology. And on top of that, you have just people's comfort level with using their available devices. Because, you know, just because it has the technology and just because I know how to use it doesn't mean I'm going to be comfortable fully taking advantage of it. So it is very challenging for the developers. And I think one thing that really helps me in this area is, while I was never what you'd call a coder, because to me that word implies a much higher level of skill than I ever achieved, I did have to build my own website through HTML and PHP for over 5 years. So I understand some of the challenges on that side of the computer. And so I think it allows me to be more empathetic to the challenges of trying to design for all these different disabilities. And then, of course, you throw in things like autism and dyslexia. And, you know, for some people with dyslexia, it's a matter of offering a wide variety of color palette options on your background and foreground text. That's not an easy thing to do. So it's not easy, but we notice companies that make the effort. And that's the important thing. It's not the results. It's not the meeting an arbitrary list of rules. It's not a, you know, an extensive checklist. It's sincere effort. It's continuous progress. And it's also really putting yourself in another person's place and making the effort to try to understand what is needed and to try to achieve those goals. But it's not easy. You're never going to get there. And I really hope that by having this conversation, we'll help people get past the overwhelm and the fear, and we'll just go, hey, I'm not going to get 100% or 80% or 50% on my accessibility rating, but I can do something. You know, I can take certain steps on my website that are pretty much obvious to anybody. So hopefully we'll get some people to take their first steps either on their own or with help from a nonprofit or advocacy group or with help from a social media community or with help by hiring a consultant.
Yeah, no. Well, so before we get into that's really good stuff, because like you said, there's just so many different rabbit holes that you can go down with that. But before we get into that, like, you know, you talk about building your website and different things like that. What came to mind when you were talking there too was I remember being contacted a while ago, and it was probably some kind of scam. I don't really know. That's what I want to ask you. There was something people said, you know, hey, you have to change your website by such and such a date for it to be, you know, handicap accessible or disability accessible or something like that, or you're going to face this $10,000 fine by the government, right? So my question for you is, what kind of laws are actually out there and do exist for people doing business in the online space? Is there something that's required by law to do, or is there anything that you can share with us in regards to that?
Right. Well, in the U.S., there's the Americans with Disabilities Act, which requires that you make reasonable accommodations if you do business in the public sector, which most of us do. There's a web convention which goes under the initials of WCAG, and those words escape me, so I sometimes get them wrong. But there are laws in the U.S. and in other countries, and in general in the U.S., the penalties come from individuals or groups filing suit against your company. In the UK and Europe and other places, you can be assessed a direct penalty for not making your content accessible. However, there is a timeline involved. There are benefits to showing progress and the fact that you've been making an effort. And I don't think any of those penalties are designed to put businesses out of business, because generally the people who crafted the laws about accessibility were trying to prevent putting a hardship on business owners. The UK is probably the most aggressive anywhere. And more often than not, accessibility requirements here in the US don't come from new US regulations or lawsuits. They come from companies in other parts of the world changing their regulations. And then, as you know, if you want to do business on the web, you've got to do business everywhere. So people will change to reflect those. I would say in general, if you get an unsolicited email telling you that you have to do this by a certain date or you're going to face a severe fine, and you need to hire the person who sent you that email, the odds are it is spam. That would be my guess. However, if you are concerned about it, you know, there are websites that offer site checkers that will test your accessibility. There are a wide variety of nonprofits here in the U.S., like the American Foundation for the Blind, National Federation of the Blind. There are similar organizations in other parts of the world where, you know, you could reach out to somebody at a local chapter of one of those organizations and just find out where you stand. I really need to become much more familiar with the regulations. And one of the reason that I'm not as up on the law as other people might be is my approach to this is we have to give business owners the why. We have to get them to do it without the worry of the punishment, but by giving them a good reason to do it out of their own self-interest. That's my particular approach to it, which is why I'm not more up on the regulation side of it.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. And I know that's, I mean, that's a very, very good insight there. No, I appreciate that. So this is interesting. I mean, we could talk more about I like what you mentioned about the sites that can check those types of things. So we'll get back into that later on. But you mentioned, you know, it's people like you notice companies who make the effort. So if it's not super regulated, if it's not forced down upon you, it becomes, you know, kind of something that is, you know, something that I can proactively do because I want to do these things or need to do these things for my business and for the customers of my business. Right. So if you notice when a company tries to make things more accessible and inclusive for a lot of people, you know, is that like, what effect does that have? Is there a network effect there that takes place? Is there a conglomeration effect? Like, you know, I'm trying to think in terms of a business owner, like, is it like you mentioned, like I'll notice when this actually happens. So, you know, is it worth it to make, you know, my bottom line to make the products, services and the content more accessible?
Right. Well, I like to have people look at it this way. When you make your product, services or content more inclusive, you give yourself an opportunity to reach a market that really hasn't been targeted, that currently depending on who you believe, is somewhere around 1 billion to 1.3 billion people globally. And we do notice. And I've told people over the years that when we find a company that's making the effort, that we will tell our friends, our family, our coworkers, and even our enemies about it, because we just know how hard it is to find something that's accessible. And I'll give you a good example. I send out a lot of emails, as you know, and had been looking for a long time to find a relationship management option that was accessible. And I tried dozens of them. And I finally found something called Less Annoying CRM on a list of the 10 best for 2023. And I found out that they were very accessible. So I've reached out to the owners. I've been continuing to give them ideas as far as what I think would make their product even better. And even without an affiliate link, it's a service that I have told a lot of people about, because there are so many of those companies that say their service is accessible, and then you start to use it and you find out, well, maybe it is with sighted assistance, or maybe it is if they help me with a lot of it, or maybe it is if I spend hours doing something that should take me minutes. So, you know, there's a personal example of a company that I value their efforts in accessibility, and I tell other people about them. And so it is a cumulative effect. And there are some companies that will take it even farther, and they will include accessibility in their marketing approach, such as hiring influencers who have disabilities, including people with disabilities in their advertisements on television or radio or the internet, sending out press releases, showing the progress they've made or awards they've received or reviews that they've gotten of their work from people with disabilities. So there's a lot of opportunity to generate goodwill that can eventually turn into new customers or possibly keeping your existing customers. Or one other thing that's overlooked is a lot of people in the workforce today, especially the younger people, they feel better about working for a company if the company does things like diversity, equity, inclusion, and that includes people with disabilities. So I've even heard from some business owners who tell me that by implementing accessibility and inclusion, they've had lower levels of turnover among their teams, especially in areas like customer service, where turnover is usually pretty high.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So, okay, that's kind of what I was thinking when you mentioned that. So that's really, really neat. So what are some of the most, you know, when it comes to getting onto a website or even an app, you know, I'm a big app guy, I do software and that kind of stuff. Like, what are some of the most common things that you see or mistakes that you see that affect, you know, disabled people from accessing sites, apps, those things like that? What are some of the most common things?
Right. I'll address that in just a minute, but I wanted to make one more point about the value of accessibility. Okay. And that is that when you create products and services that are more accessible, they usually turn out to be more enjoyable for customers that don't have a disability. So you can make your product and service better in a way that will allow you to attract new clients and retain existing ones. So that's another advantage that I forgot to mention earlier. Yeah. And as far as some of the most common issues, very often people, even now, will still add images without adding what's called alternative text tags that allow a screen reader to know that an image is there. And even people that use the descriptions will write things like the company's logo or the company's mailing address or, you know, the logo for our shipping company. It will tell me nothing about the image, but they will have technically fulfilled the requirement of having alternative text for their image. And as I like to remind them, you spent money and time creating these images. You obviously want people to see them and remember them. So why wouldn't you want the blind person to know about your amazing artwork that's in your logo or the beautiful people and the wonderful expressions on the faces of your staff or your customers in your marketing images? So that's one of the big ones. Another one that always surprises me, especially from larger companies, is unlabeled buttons, unlabeled links, or links and buttons that are labeled, but every single one of them has the exact same label. So you have no way of knowing which one is which or where they go to from here. One that isn't so common, but it probably should be, is when people post videos, it would be great if they could add what's called an audio description that would let the blind person know what's going on on the screen whenever people aren't talking. Audio descriptions is very common in movies and television, but still not common on YouTube or other video platforms, but it really ought to be because it's a great way to build a connection between you and your audience that happens to have the disability or knows somebody who does. And then the number one thing, and I don't know if you can call it a mistake, because in order for it to be a mistake, I think you have to understand that it's something that you could do wrong in the first place, and that has to do with the mouse. Most people do not know this even now, but in general, if you use a screen reader for your desktop or your laptop, you do not have access to a mouse. You can sometimes simulate a mouse, but that's not reliable. So one of the most common things, and like I say, it's not really a mistake, but it would definitely be a point of emphasis, is to design your websites as if the person using them will have only keyboard access. And of course, if you build things based on a mouse, because that's the way most people do it, then at least offer keyboard options and have a place where people can find out what the keyboard shortcuts are, such as the streaming platform we're using today. I'm not going to mention their name, but it would have been nice if you could have pressed a button and you could have told me, Max, this is the keys you press to turn your camera on. And those keys would have actually worked. But, you know, that's not understanding the lack of a mouse, I think, is one of the biggest barriers when people design websites. And then, of course, you mentioned apps. With apps, I think a lot of people, with at least people that I've come in contact with that are using apps with screen readers, there's still a limit to how much they'll do with the screen. So I think one thing that people need to make a more effort to offer pairing with a Bluetooth keyboard or some other type of entry. Some people will use a digital braille display to enter some of the stuff to their phone. So a lot of places will allow you to use an external keyboard, but a lot of the functions don't actually respond to those keyboards. So that would be some things I would mention either desktop or with apps.
Very interesting. And as he was mentioning, for you guys, if you're watching this, you see there's just kind of an empty space here, because I learned this firsthand. You know, I was saying, hey, can we turn on the camera? Can we do the video part of this? But was really kind of unable to do it. And then there's no way for me as the host inside of this software to turn on cameras, to control different things inside of the guest piece. So I got a firsthand lesson in that. It was pretty eye opening for that stuff. So for those of you who were not aware for that. But that was really interesting. So you mentioned that. So now what are some of those simple things? Like if I really didn't know the thing about alt text, to be very honest with you. I've always seen that inside of SEO pieces, or when you add something inside of, I think, like in WordPress or like different sites, there's alt text for this image. I never really understood like why that was important. Now I really understand, okay, it's worth taking the time to do that. So, you know, in addition to adding alt text to images and things like that, you know, what are some simple things that people can do to improve that, to improve the inclusiveness of all this stuff?
Right. Well, and one more point that I need to make about alt text is, without the alt text, my screen reader does not know that the image is there. So What do you think happens if that image is attached to a link or a button? The link or the button doesn't exist to my screen reader either.
Right.
So the issue we were having with this streaming platform, it could be that there were buttons there, but the buttons weren't labeled, or they were images that weren't labeled. I don't know. I'm definitely planning on reaching out to them and asking. But yeah, for alt text, it's important for just the images. But if your images are linked to other actions on your website, then it becomes critical. So, some simple things that people can do. One of the simplest is to just limit the number of items you put on any one page, because with a screen reader or screen magnification, or if you're using one of the physical navigation things designed for people with less motor control, the more items there are on a page, the longer it takes us to find the item that we really need to find, the thing we came there that you told us we would find when we came there in the first place, kind of a thing. So fewer items on the homepage, navigation where the item on the homepage that we do click takes us to another page that has been designed in a minimalist approach, let's call it. Using those buttons that allow you to pass over the items that are on every page. I forget what those are called, but it'll usually say you can head directly to the information or something like that. I don't know why that isn't occurring, coming to me right this, but you know, there's usually a button. If you press that, then you bypass the menus or stuff that's on every page. So just limiting the number of items is a great first thing. If you have the ability to offer the option of changing the size of the text or the color of the background or the text, that can be really helpful, especially to people with autism or other developmental diseases. And it can also be helpful to people using screen magnification, because a lot of people that have to get their text enlarged to see it will generally change the color to a contrast that works best for their vision. And you really never know what that perfect combination is going to be for them. So that's something simple. Making sure that your forms, your links, your buttons can be pressed without requiring a mouse key to be activated. And another simple thing is, when you get ready to update your website or your app, make sure that you actually need to update it. I can't tell you how many times my day has been ruined because somebody updated a website that, in my opinion, they only updated for form's sake to justify that they were still worthy of getting a salary in. I understand wanting to keep your job, but updating stuff just to update stuff is a... And it can create problems because it can take so little of a change in a website to force an adaptive technology user to have to relearn how to navigate your page all over again. And in some cases, an update can prevent you from using a website altogether. That happens more often with apps and software than it does with websites. But sometimes a change in a website will make it so frustrating that you just stop using it for a while. And a really good example of that is I haven't used Twitter/X as much lately as I used to, but a while back they moved the at key and the hashtag key off of the first screen on your iOS devices to the numbers section. So now whenever I want to tag somebody or use a hashtag in a Twitter post, I have to first select numbers, then I have to navigate around the screen until I get to the at or the number symbol and press it. Then I have to switch back to letters and enter my text before I can continue writing my thing on Twitter. And, you know, they haven't changed that back, even though I'm not the only person who has complained to them about it. You would think that's a very small change. It shouldn't really impact the lives of a person with a disability, but it does because of the steps involved in getting to where they moved it to. So I highly advise people, if you're thinking about updating your website, make sure you need it and send out an email. Even if you don't know you have a disabled user, you might have one. So send out a notification in some form and go, we're going to change X. We're going to change it to these two new things instead of where it's been or what it has been in the past. And it's going to start taking effect at this date and time so that if you do have people with disabilities, you don't frustrate them and anger them and have them go onto social media wanting to tell people how bad you are.
Yeah. Wow. Very, very interesting stuff. I'm learning so much here. I hope you guys are too. All right. So a couple more questions. So, you know, and I think we mentioned this a little bit earlier, but I kind of want to dive into it, you know, because the show, we are, you know, a lot of business owners, we're entrepreneurs and stuff. So inside of that piece, we're also thinking about, you know, ROI. We're thinking about return on investment and investing our time in order for returns. How large really is the, you know, is the disability community and like the related market? Like how big are we talking here? I mean, I know it's hard to maybe put inside of one big bucket, but I'm just curious, do you have any numbers or stats or anything on that at all?
Right. Well, we know that roughly 1.1 out of every 7 people consider themselves as having a disability. And they're pretty sure the number on total people is 1.2 or 1.3 million people globally. The real hard part comes in judging their buying power. And this is one of those areas where I would tell people not to worry so much about the actual buying power of the disabled person, but also the buying power of the people they come in contact with. And also a very important point with the disability community is, at this time, there are still so few people making effort that we tend to be very loyal consumers. We tend to stick with brands that have made their products and services accessible, and we've even been known to overpay in many cases in order to continue doing business with a company because while there could be other cheaper products, their product saves us time and aggravation, which has value. So those are some things to consider. again, that it's hard to verify the market. I just saw a study that said that for companies that embrace accessibility, that they generally receive 2.7. They generally increase their revenues by 2.7 times what companies that fail to adopt accessibility, and they generally increase their profits by 4.1 times companies that aren't embracing accessibility.
Wow.
But there's a But there's a new study that comes out every week, and you know, there are still business owners who will go, there aren't enough of you, you don't have enough money, why should I care? So it's a continuing thing, and we really do need more research. But yeah, and the other thing is I just saw another study on inclusion when it comes to employment, and they say that companies that embrace accessibility and inclusion in employment have on average a 12% lower turnover on the employees. So as you know, one of the most expensive costs in a business, especially businesses at scale, is recruiting, hiring, training, retaining. So those are both some great stats, but we really do need a lot more research to be done. But still, 2.7 times sales and 4.1 times profit over those companies not embracing accessibility is pretty strong.
Wow. Yeah, those are really some intriguing stats. I'd be interested to dive more into that. So, all right. Very interesting. So one other question I have, I've had a couple people on here recently, and it seems to be the topic of the year in 2023, is the good old topic of AI, right? You know, artificial intelligence stuff. So why not include it here? That's kind of where I'm thinking. So
I think it's a great question. I think it's a great question because AI is either the biggest potential boon to inclusion or it's the scariest dog in the yard. Just depends on how you look at it. But I just finished writing a post that's going to come out in a couple of weeks on audioeye.com about this subject, about the future of business and especially the future of work for people with disabilities based on the effects of artificial intelligence. And one thing I learned is that there's two types of artificial intelligence. There's generative, which is basically it helps us do things based on its past experience with the kind of things we want to do or that other people have done that are similar. And then there's the other kind, the scary kind, where basically it can think for itself and people are going to have to figure out how to control it at some point. But the experts I've listened to say we're looking at 3 to 5 to 10 years down the road before we really have to worry about something like that taking. But people with disabilities, you know, some of them are worried because the job market has not improved for disabled people the way it has for everybody else. Even in what's considered one of the tightest job markets in decades, the average unemployment rate for people with disabilities is 70 to 75%. If you have a neurological or a developmental disability, it's 85%. That doesn't include people who are underpaid or who can only work a certain number of hours because they have a physical condition where they can't afford to lose their health care that they're receiving from disability. Underpayment, underemployment, underappreciation. So even in this job market, AI, of course, has a lot of those people thinking, well, what if it comes along and some of the things it does replace the things that I do? And that is a fear. I don't believe it's something we have to worry about too much. As I tell my friends with disabilities, I don't think we have to worry about going back to begging on street corners. But that is a legitimate fear that some of them have because of AI. Now, on the positive side, AI can help you write text for, say, like creating a resume or a LinkedIn profile or sending emails that you send a lot of. It can do some of the accessibility, but depending on artificial intelligence to do accessibility is not going to be something where it can handle it 100%. But if you're a business owner and you have a limited amount of time and resources, if you could depend on an AI program to get you to say 70%, and then you only have to worry about that other 20 or 30%, then that would be great, obviously. Now, the key part to that is, just like with any other automation option, like there are automation options out there right now. I actually contribute to a website called audioeye.com. They offer an automation option for accessibility. And some people may think it's odd that I promote a company that I probably compete with, but as long as they keep paying me right for them, and as long as I'm still building my business, I think it's a great arrangement. But as they've been doing it for 10 years, and even they won't tell people that automation can do it all. That it takes automation plus humans. And here's the key part. Those humans have to have the disabilities. You have to have a team that includes people who can input into that artificial intelligence engine what it is that the disabled people need, so that the AI can generate accessibility based on needs rather than accessibility based on functions.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. I like how you frame that in both negative and positive lights. That's really, really cool. So, well, that's very cool. I see here, do you have the Accessibility Advantage show? Is that, I know you mentioned you were working on that. Is that live at the moment?
No, I wish it was. I'm going to be going live after the first of the year. Okay. And one of the things I realized about the show is, since about half the audience is going to be people in the business community, and since most all my guests will be, I've had to learn that business people have busier schedules than people in the self-help / inspirational arenas do. So booking guests has turned out to be harder. Scheduling has turned out to be harder. And more importantly, many of the people I want to talk to answer to somebody else. So they have to get permission from somebody higher up in the company before they can even give me an answer about coming on my show and talking about how accessibility has been embraced by or affected their companies. So that's the reason why the show hasn't launched. But the Accessibility Advantage, I've been told that there's a real need for it, that the idea of approaching things from a positive point of view and sharing content from people who have already done it, so they can help business people that are struggling either with the implementation or just the whole overwhelm of, you know, how do I do this? What do I do? What do I do first kind of stuff. So I feel like it's important podcast. I really wish it were already live, but you know, as somebody who's has a podcast, you understand that sometimes we have to do things we don't like in order to sustain those things once we get them started.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. That's part of the game. So, well, can people still go to theaccessibilityadvantage.com to connect with you?
Yes, they can, and okay. They can reach out to me through the email address on there or my scheduling link on there, and it'll be the place to find out about the podcast. So we'll soon have a sign up form on there. People can, follow the email address so that when we do launch that very first episode, they'll be sure not to miss anything.
Okay. No, I agree. I'm that's actually a very intriguing show topic. When I saw that on your notes sheet, I was very intrigued by that, and I wanted to ask about that because that sounds like something I would even tune into. I mean, that's very, this whole thing has kind of got my wheels turning with all of this stuff. So
you want to hear something funny about that?
Sure.
I have been hearing about ChatGPT and AI going back, you know, a year probably, but I just was afraid of it. I didn't know whether it would be accessible or, you know, I didn't want to use something that might get away from me. And so I waited. And quite often, people who use adaptive technology like myself are late adopters, either trying new things altogether or trying updated versions of software they're already using. But I was trying to figure out what to call the podcast and how to think about what I do as far as, you know, advocating for more accessibility, but in a non-threatening, positive, let's show them what's in it for them kind of way. A friend of mine said, Max, write down a whole bunch of stuff about your message and your podcast and send it to me, and I'll run it through ChatGPT for you. And the one phrase that ChatGPT spat out in three different formats was Accessibility Advantage. And that's what we decided to go with.
Well, there you go. There, that's pretty interesting. I like that. That's really cool. Awesome, man. Well, it's been really, really eye-opening, really educational to listen to you. I hope everyone listening to the show agrees with me. That really learned a bunch. I'm kind of excited to go back, listen to this, maybe have you on again in the future, like talk about some stuff. So very cool. Thank you for joining. Really appreciate having you on.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it. You know, it's whenever you start something new, you don't know if people are going to be interested or care about it. So thank you for doing that. But also, I want to thank you because as I've been sitting here talking with you, I have been realizing, you know, Max, there are several areas that you need to become more informed of in your own right. So as I tell people who ask me about podcasts, I always tell them, you know, if you don't have at least one aha moment for yourself as the host or the guest, you're probably doing it wrong. So I want to thank you because your questions have helped me to understand that, you know, like all of us, Max still has more to learn. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. No problem. That's what I love about this. That's why I love having my own show and learning things and asking the questions that I can ask. That's awesome. So, well, I appreciate you, man. So, yeah. So if you guys want to connect with Max, you can go to www.theaccessibilityadvantage.com. Okay. So, and then keep an eye out for this show is probably going to release before his show is actually available, but definitely go there, sign up for that. If this conversation interests you, you want to learn a little bit more about that, I'm sure he's going to be the guy to listen to on this. This is really, really cool stuff. So thank you again, Max, for joining. Again, as always, appreciate all of you joining. Please subscribe. Please give us a rating. Please share the show with anyone that you think might get value from this, especially someone in this world that might, you know, be interested in this world of accessibility, inclusion, this type of stuff. This is probably a very, very good educational episode to break them into the Tech Byte show to get them warmed up to you know, listening to me talk and babble on about all this cool stuff. So appreciate all of you. Thank you very much for joining, and we will see you next time.